CliffCentral.com.
A very good afternoon and welcome to the Youth Leadership Platform, and you're chilling with your host, Bongani Tau. Today we have a very wonderful special. We're talking everything fashion and fashionomics. We have very lovely guests, so you do not want to miss any minute of the interviews that we're going to be having today. But before we start, we'd like to talk a little bit about the stuff that's happening on social media and the current affairs. Firstly, we want to bid farewell to the wonderful Uncle Ahmed Katrada and send our condolences to the family and friends. He's been a struggle icon and innovator, I think, and a doer in his lifetime. He set out to make sure that no stone was unturned in his journey of fighting for a better life for all of us. So we want to thank him for a lifetime of service and an edifice that he has built of sacrifice and leadership. Again, talking a little bit about the shuffling that happened in the parliament and what's happening in our country, it's very, very alarming. So we hope our young listeners that listen to the show and are aware of the current affairs and what's happening in parliament and in the government and politics will take up their tools and stand for something. And the only way you can be able to do that is by casting your vote to the right people so that we can avoid any further mishaps like these happening in our country that will take us to the slums, you know. The RAND took a knock from what happened last week with the reshuffling. But on a light note, moving right along, last week myself and Sasha, we're part of the amazing, amazing, amazing experience at the South African Fashion Week at Hyde Park Corner. And a quick shout out to Forever New Earthnut Clothing for dressing Sasha Lee and Batu for dressing myself. And a big shout out to Trisha Jivan, our photographer, for capturing all the moments that took place over the past week. Big shout out to the SA Fashion Week team for inviting us, and you know, the experience was really amazing.
Thank you.
Everyone that was working there was on the ball. They knew what to do, when to do it, and they just made our lives very convenient, I should say. From the shows to the organization of SA Fashion Week, to the guests, to the atmosphere, everything was just truly amazing. And I felt in my element, being somebody who really loves fashion myself. The climate and meeting different people and designers at the SA Fashion Week was really, really, really amazing. Now, chilling with me in studio today is the wonderful, phenomenal founder and CEO of the South African Fashion Week. Drum roll, please, Sasha. It is the wonderful Lucilla Boyson. Lucilla, welcome to studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in and being with us today. And thank you for the experience at the South African Fashion Week. We really enjoyed it. So now, starting off the interview, we would like to delve a bit into the Lucilla before the wonderful woman that we're seeing today. So I'd like for you to elaborate just a little bit on you as a young girl, where you grew up, and some of the influences that you've had.
Well, I grew up on a farm.
Okay.
A real farm. A farm that at times had no electricity. I come from a family of four. I have three brothers, three
yes.
amazing brothers. I had a mother that worked her whole life. She started working or got up every morning at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and came home at 6 o'clock in the afternoon, put her handbag down on the counter in the kitchen or on the table and cooked dinner for six people every night of her life. Yeah, that is really my very early sort of background. I studied to be a teacher, and I was a high school teacher. I hated all the red tape. What was the biggest problem for me in teaching is that it didn't matter what you did in your at school, as long or if you made a mistake you could never rectify it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what you do. You know, one example of this was I taught at a very sort of poor school in Langlaagte.
Okay.
And there was a child that a dynamic girl, absolutely dynamic girl, and the school voted for her to be the head girl of the school. And in fact, that turned my career. That made me realize that I'm not where I should be, and it had a real influence on the rest of my life. But so we were sitting in the staff room, and the of course all the votes came in, and this girl absolutely all the children really wanted her to be the head girl, and she deserved it because she was a leader.
Yes.
Finished. And she had an incredible positivity about her. And one of the school, and they said, okay, now it's the school teachers to vote whether this girl would be the head girl.
Yes.
And that would also have changed her life.
Hmm.
You must understand how things work. And one of the school teachers put her hand up and she said that this girl stole 5 rand off her desk when she was in standard 6. And I thought, wow. And the girl did not become headmistress, a head girl. Because of a mistake that she made 5 years ago.
Hmm.
And, you know, for me, that turned my whole career, because I decided that it's not what I want to do. I cannot be part of a system that operates like that. And it's then when it actually coincided. You know, it's quite amazing to see or to experience how things actually happen in your life to make you change.
Yes.
In order to do something else that you actually supposed to be doing. Yeah. So that is sort of my life before I then became a model and started into fashion.
Now I want us to transition into that how did you now get into modeling, and what was the influence in moving into the creative and fashionable side of you, starting with modeling?
I think I was always a quite creative, but in a different way. I used to make all my clothes because we did not have money for my mother to go out and buy all these clothes. She actually bought and paid off a sewing machine when I started studying, and I made all my clothes while I was studying.
Wow.
So I do think that I always had that. I come from my grandmother and my aunt were incredibly stylish, unbelievably stylish. And I think that I sort of come from all of that. Although I think everybody has somebody in their family that is stylish.
Yes.
Actually, yes. I think we can just sort of like put that one down. Then I was scouted by a model scout, and I became a model. But those years, they trained people to become a model.
Okay.
You know, you could not just cruise in, cruise out, and there you are. So it took you learn about everything that the models don't learn about today.
Today.
And I was never really a very good model because I wasn't tall enough.
Okay.
And I was not really beautiful enough. The camera was not really friendly. I was not camera friendly. Do you know what I mean?
Or
the,
okay.
But that helped me to develop the production side of fashion. So I was a house model. I have a perfect 34 body figure, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the model that the manufacturers and the designers called on to come and try the things on before
okay.
it. So that was quite cool. And I then learned about all of that. So
yes.
I learned about what happens in a factory, what happens when they do pricing, what happens when they do selling. So I then stopped to a certain extent, stopped doing modeling, but I started my career as a fashion producer.
Hmm.
And that was absolutely incredible, because all of a sudden I could be, I could say what I wanted to do, and I could create these incredibly beautiful shows that gave me huge satisfaction,
mm-hmm.
and that then took me to the next step, which is really starting to promote the South African designers.
Hmm. Now, what inspired you starting South African Fashion Week? Because that in 97 was just an idea that was going to be initiated. Fast forward to today, it's massive. So what inspired that idea that now you need to start to work on a production on that level?
Well, it actually goes back quite a while. Can take us back quite a while. I started in 1985. In 1984, I went on a fashion tour. Those years, all the buyers would go on a fashion tour. So it would be very much, if I can explain it, like a travel agent would then put a group together, and it would be all the buyers of all the boutiques, mm-hmm. and they would go to London, Paris, Italy, Germany, and then come back buying from international designers.
Yes.
And I then went with, just to experience what actually happened, and that is really, you know, what is the essence of success, and that is knowing your subject, knowing what happens out there, studying it all the time. And you know, it doesn't just stop with fashion, or it doesn't just start with fashion. You cannot do fashion if you don't know about fashion.
Hmm.
And you know, it takes us right back to a thing that I really feel is missing in our country, and that is that curiosity, that want to know more, that the power is actually in my hands. If I just know more, I can actually have more power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's politics. You know, if you actually know more about politics, and
yes.
you learn about the background of politics and why politics are there and what has happened in the world, because you must know, it's not like we have a new wheel here.
Yes.
It's the same wheel. It's just turning, turning, turning in the world. History repeats itself. So, and the same with fashion. You know, you cannot wear fashion, do fashion, talk about fashion if you don't know about fashion. You know, I do courses, and I ask the students to name me 10 South African designers, and they can't name it.
Hmm.
So what? They can call a brand name, an international brand name, but they can't call the most amazing designer like Effie Moll, Floyd, Swiss, African Swiss,
yes, DeMille.
They don't know it. So therefore, the youth must understand that the power of everything lies in their hand. Really, seriously. And they have got to go and learn about these things.
Hmm.
You know, if they talk about fracking, they've got to go and learn what that is all about. They've got to be curious enough to actually go and sit behind that computer and find out what is it, so that I can have an opinion about it.
Hmm.
And it's the same about everything, whether it's food, whether it's fashion, whether it's anything in life.
You've touched a bit about the objectives of SA Fashion Week, but I'd like to, you know, formalize that as a question, that what were some of the objectives that you wanted to get to with this production?
Yeah. So when I went overseas in 1984, I realized that if we will in South Africa never have an industry if we don't have a marketing platform for designers.
Mm.
Where a designer can choose whether they are good enough and not somebody else. Because while I was doing production and other producers were producing shows, they would choose the designer. So what would happen is there would be a company, and they would say, we're doing a launch, we would like a fashion show. And fashion was entertainment. Fashion was not business.
Okay.
And it's then in 1984 that I realized that until we turn that around and turn fashion into a business.
Yes.
And not into an entertainment, only when we do that will we be able to grow the fashion. Now, in Italy, fashion is the second biggest industry. In France, also, if not the biggest, the second biggest. In England, it is the biggest. So, it's a no-brainer for me. We're talking about job creation in South Africa.
Yes.
We all wear fashion. What? It's a no-brainer. Well, all we have to do, we don't even have to do anything else. All we have to do is actually start designing clothes and making clothes so that we can, each and every one of us can buy South African fashion.
Yes.
I mean, that is what they've done internationally. Anyway, so I came back and it was not the right time to start a fashion week.
Okay.
In my opinion. And you know what? I can't even tell you today why it was not, because it was, I was not conscious of that. It was just a feeling. And I do a lot of things on feeling. Because I feel it's the right time. I believe in you know, it is really just like that. So, and I do think fashion also works like that. And I think if you speak to DeMille later, you will get sort of that sort of idea from him as well. So, in 1997, in February, I literally got up one morning and I said, today I'm going to start the South African Fashion Week. And I could have called it anything. I could have called it the Johannesburg Fashion Week. I could have called it the Cape Town Fashion Week. I could have called it the Durban Fashion Week, but because South Africa is such a small country when it comes to the rest of the world, and everybody knows about South Africa, or not everybody, but do you,
a lot of people, yes,
exactly. And for me, I was sort of putting my energies out into Europe, into America, and also into Africa, but into the East. I thought that the best name, or I felt that the best name would be the South African Fashion Week, and that is why I called it the South African Fashion Week. And I started a platform where a designer can say, okay, this is my income every month I am taking, or this is my business plan, this is my financial plan for the year. I know that it's very important for me to do advertising. I'm going to take so many percent, or 20% or 10% of my income, and I'm going to invest that in advertising for myself. Mm-hmm. And that is what I created. I created a marketing platform where designers can market their collections to the media, to the buyers, and to their clients, and to the consumers out there.
So now with the production, there's a lot that went into that. You look at the complexity of the production today, with different designers, trade events, launch parties and things like that. It's very intricate. When you started out, what are some of the challenges that you had to overcome?
Well, one of the biggest challenges is the fact that we never had a venue to do a real fashion week in. We still don't have it today. Because there is no recognition from the government per se,
okay,
there is not a space. There's not a collaboration. There's not a space created for fashion like they have in for instance, in Paris.
Yes.
So I had to take a marquee, which is usually a no-go because it's like a wedding tent. I call it a wedding tent. And I had to lift it so that it could be 8 meters high for the in order to carry proper lighting to light fashion, because it's very important how fashion is lit.
Yes.
And we lifted a marquee at the Nelson Mandela Square, was the first fashion week in 1997, and we lifted the marquee with 144 gallon drums and scaffolding. We lifted a marquee so that I could get that height, because at that stage the Sandton Convention Center was not built. So we did not have anything in South Africa with a height except for the City Hall.
Okay.
The City Hall had the height.
Yes.
But of course it was not the right, it's not the right place for something like that. So that was for me the biggest challenge, and it's almost stayed, that challenge always almost stayed with me. Because we are back in the marquee again. Well, we have been for the past 7 years, because somehow, fashion sits good in a marquee. It's been all over the world. It sits in marquees.
Yes.
I think purely because you can move it and you can do with it whatever you want. So that really has been one of the biggest challenges for me from a production point of view.
And it was innovation that got you through all of those challenges that you faced as you went about the production.
Yes, but of course, if you go to the Berlin Fashion Week, or if you go to the New York Fashion Week, I go all over. I'm going to the Berlin Fashion Week now in July.
Okay.
I go to New York, the New York Fashion Week all the time, and the London Fashion Week. We have very close contact with him. They have high marquees. They have marquees that are eight meters high, and that you can achieve what you want to achieve because people do import them. Or they have them. In our country, it is just not, it's just not available. So you have to make do. You have to not lower your standards. You have to see how you can make other things come up to your standard and not lower yourself to down to what the standards are.
Coming to some financial challenges that you might have faced over the years, combining a beautiful production that South African Fashion Week is, how are some ways that you've been innovative in sourcing the funds, for one, and using the budget to work the best way you know how to produce the most high quality of production that you can?
I think that it's a brilliant question. And, you know, in 20 years, nobody's ever asked me this question. So thank you very much for asking it. I think that is also a huge challenge. The fortunate thing about having the knowledge about what you're doing. So if you have the knowledge, true knowledge about your subject or your career or your, or whatever you do, you know how to cut the costs, without affecting the actual product at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we've been doing with Fashion Week. It is incredibly difficult to get sponsorship. People sponsor sports events mostly. They don't understand that in targeting sports event, they're mainly targeting the male, and they do not come near the females, and by bringing in fashion, they immediately tap into fashion. But a very interesting thing happened. They tap into the female market, but a very interesting thing is happening in South Africa, and we've just had research done. We are sitting on 54 female not database, followers.
Okay.
And the rest male. So it's almost balancing out in South Africa. And I think it's a fantastic thing for fashion. That the male, your male audience is just as powerful as your female audience. And you know, maybe that will start changing the way sponsors look at fashion. And another thing that also doesn't help is it doesn't help all these fashion weeks that are all over the show. It doesn't help it because it cuts the pie. Do you know? And in this country, there's no protection really. I mean, Fashion Week, the South African Fashion Week,
yes.
The word Fashion Week has been registered since 2002 or 2001. It doesn't bother anybody. It's nothing that stops them from calling their event a fashion week. You know, you can start a thing tomorrow, and I cannot use the sponsor's money to fight something that should not be. You know, it should be very easy to actually stop somebody from calling themselves a registered mark.
Yes.
But it doesn't happen in this country. And that hasn't helped, because now there are, I think we are sitting on something like 11 fashion weeks in this small little country where we don't even have like 200 designers.
Yes.
So people think that it's an easy thing, you know, just let's just do it. Or they have lots of money and they think, oh, well, what can we do? Let's do a fashion week. And it's not about that. It really is about building an industry. And it's about, and that is another thing that we must learn in the country, is to do things that dovetail with other things so that it doesn't break the one thing down and build another one up. There's enough space for everybody to live and for everybody to play an incredibly important role in the fashion industry. But we have to work together.
Collaborate.
Because at the end of the day, it's not the actual events that suffer. It's the designers. The designers suffer. That's it. Period.
Two leadership ideas. I wish we could go on. This I'm learning a lot, and I'm really loving this interview. But just your quick three ideas, that leadership ideas at that, since this is a leadership show. that have kept you going for 20 odd years and help you to produce such high quality production?
Well, you've got to know what you're doing. You can't just do it because somebody else is doing it. You've got to know it inside out. You have to hang in there.
Hang in there.
You have to understand that nothing will get you down if you have that staying power. You can't just try something for 3 years
and then,
or try something for 5 years. Look at what we've done at Fashion Week. Look at what we've achieved. I mean, we started off by showing 17 designers.
Yes.
This past week, we showed 68 designers. Mm. And they all have their own businesses. And they all sort of sell to boutiques. And yes, and then, you know, don't take your eye off the ball. If you take your eye off the ball, you've had it. Focus on what you want to do. Make a commitment and understand that something, I mean, fashion has also become my life. So it's amazing. It's not like I'm going to work and now I'm going to live my life.
Yes.
I have the most amazing friends. I mean, just looking at the audience that came to Fashion Week, just you tell me how beautiful they were. I mean,
exceptional.
How amazing.
Yes.
So it's not just the designers. It's a group. It's all of us playing the game of fashion together in order to grow the GDP in the country.
Hmm. Quick message to a Lucilla that's starting out. Young Lucilla that's starting out. What would you say to her?
Goodness, I would need a week.
You'd need a week.
I need a week, but I would say find one dream and follow it.
Hmm. Powerful. Mouthful. We can literally close the show now. We're done. We're out of here. It's been a pleasure to and an honor for us to have you in studio today, Lucilla.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for coming through. Hopefully people that are listening can come together and collaborate and grow SA Fashion Week, because it's not about yourself or the people behind Fashion Week. It's about the designers, it's about the country, it's about fashion.
It is.
That's the bigger picture.
Exactly.
I hope.
It's only about that.
It's only about the
it's
bigger
picture.
It's
only about that. Mm. Yeah.
So just a recap from what we've spoken about, that you cannot connect the dots looking ahead. Lucilla did quite a number of things understanding fashion before she got to where she was in starting the production of SA Fashion Week. So do as much as you can in acquiring knowledge that will be beneficial if you want to do things like these that will impact a lot of lives of a lot of people and the world in whatever industry that you're in. Three leadership ideas. It's knowledge. Lucilla said you must learn and know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Keep at it. Commit to it. Give yourself. Your work and your personal life shouldn't be separated. It's one thing. And focus on that. And you are sure guaranteed to have such powerful impact as Lucilla Boysen has had in the South African fashion space and continuing forward. From us at the Youth Leadership Platform, if you want to follow the conversation on our social media platforms, it's the YLP Cliff Central on Twitter and Instagram, and the Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook. Follow the SA Fashion Week at SA Fashion Week across
all
social media platforms and be part of that wonderful experience. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to have some of the exceptional designers that were at SA Fashion Week. Some of them were winners of big prizes, which we're excited to talk to and interview and find out about their lives just after the break. So stay tuned.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to CliffCentral.com. You are listening to the Youth Leadership Platform with Bongani Tau as your host. And as per usual, the Youth Leadership Platform is brought to you by Student Brands and Leadership Platform. So today we're doing a full hour of celebrating South African fashion. And we have some designers from who are showcasing at the South African Fashion Week. One is the lady behind the lovely Rubicon brand. If you were there and you saw the women's collections, that brand might have been one of the brands that stuck out to you. And you looked at it and you're like, wow, you know, I want to see the person behind this. And the next is Conrad. who won actually in a competition that was hosted by South African Fashion Week in conjunction with GQ South Africa, the Male Fashion Talent Scouting Competition winner for 2017. He joins us in studio today. We find out about their journeys and about fashion. We talk everything fashion, the economics of fashion, business of fashion, and their future as well. And we find out what their message is to young designers starting out. So we'll start with ladies first. Hangwani, behind the Rubicon brand. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you very much for coming
into studio. Hello to all your listeners.
Yes. Thanks a lot for coming into studio. And I'll have you do a quick intro as well.
Hi, everyone. Bongani, thank you so much for inviting me.
It's yes.
Very exciting to be here and to actually speak about something that I'm exceptionally passionate about. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks a lot as well for coming through. So, Hangwani, we're gonna breeze through this, you know, to cover as much content as we possibly can. So I'd like for you to briefly take us through your journey and then transition into how you got into fashion.
I'm very passionate about, I don't want to call it fashion.
Okay.
I want to call it combining fashion with style, because
okay.
It's how you coordinate your garments. So it translates into style. I'm more into style, like lifestyle.
Okay.
And I love what we call investment pieces. Hence my clothing is very inspired by the vintage look.
Okay.
Like you go back into the 50s era, you see the flares in terms of the full skirts, the full dresses, the silhouettes, the jabot collars that I've used, you know, and also I'm very inspired by nature. I love spending time in nature. So, yeah, but in terms of fashion, I grew up at home with my mother having the same type of business, you know, as I have. So I was exposed to fashion at a very young age, like at around 7 years old, you know. I obviously started playing around with fabrics, you know, creating stuff. I've got a skirt that I made at that age. Still to date, my daughter has got it. Yeah, so I've been exposed to fabrication at a very young age. Even, like, I mean, her great-grandfather had a business downtown in Johannesburg.
Okay.
You know, he would obviously buy clothes and rip them apart to create patterns from that. So obviously it's within my DNA, and fashion has been, you know, it's in me.
Yes. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Venda.
Venda?
Northern province. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I grew up in Venda, and but that was my primary days.
Yes.
High school, I grew up in Pretoria. I went to a school called Mixtibe, which is a world of education.
Okay.
It deals with projects, so it's very artsy. You know, we've got Waldorf here in Johannesburg as well, in Bryanston. So I was exposed to art at a very young age, yeah.
Yes. And then where did you study fashion?
Oh, okay. I only studied fashion in China.
Really?
Yes, but for a very short period. I had already created Rubicon, established Rubicon.
Okay.
Yeah, I did BCom marketing.
Hmm.
And I'm still studying, obviously, in business, because I'm very passionate about, obviously, taking Rubicon to another level where it's quite commercial.
Yes.
Where it's not just entertained as a brand, you know, and nothing, we don't see it creating jobs
yes.
out there. And obviously, transferring skills. I'm also accredited now. I'm accredited with the fiber processing and manufacturing sector.
Wow.
So we're able to train. I do have qualified facilitators that are qualified to facilitate with, you know.
We're going to get a bit into that and how maybe our listeners who are young and up and coming can be part of that experience. But we're going to go to Conrad. Am I pronouncing it right?
That's fine.
All right.
It's actually Kunrad.
Oh, Kunrad. There you go. Kunrad. Just take us through your early childhood. Where did you grow up, and what are some of the experiences?
Well, I actually grew up around the corner in Auckland Park where the SABC is. So,
okay.
Yeah, I was a lucky boy like that. I grew up in a big house with a grandmother, a mother that worked in the industry, that made clothes.
So there's similarities in our case.
Exactly, for the aunties. She didn't make a business of it, but she made clothes for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I grew up and had an absolute passion for it. A grandmother that that loved dressing. So that's where it all came from. My background is pretty much the same, quite arty father that loved to build and break and interrupt our lives constantly. So pretty much the same. Very, very normal school. I went to Furin to High. I really wanted to go to the art school, but my parents couldn't afford it.
Okay.
So I had to learn to do everything myself with my mom. Mm-hmm. I made Barbie doll dresses for my sister's dolls. I played around with that, but I didn't want to do anything else.
Yes.
And then I had a great opportunity to go and study at Gordon Flack Davidson Academy of Design. I'm a grandpa sitting here. I've been in the industry for 23 years.
Wow.
So I've been doing every single thing you can possibly imagine in the industry.
Yeah.
So I studied at Gordon and had an amazing background of pattern construction and manufacturing that I'm very passionate about till today. That's my background.
So when you started out, you were de Mol.
I was de Mol, yeah.
And then why the change from de Mol to de Mol?
Well, you know, I can do everything. So I started with women couture.
Okay.
And I did bridal. I won the bridal prize when I was a student. So
wow.
I did the bridal stuff. And then I met the wonderful life partner, Rian.
Okay.
He's sitting here. And he was a bad influence. He started to, could never find clothes he liked. So
yeah.
It was like, baby, please make me something. It's like, you know, I don't make male stuff,
yeah.
but let's try it.
Yes.
And it started there. And the love of androgyny started.
Okay.
And the love of crossing the gender barriers started with Rian because he's quite avant-garde.
Okay.
And I started to love that. And I started to like the producing for the male form.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. And we decided it needed a different label.
Yes.
Because de Mol was more couture, evening gowns, wedding gowns. That's still in production in our company.
Okay.
That is our bread and butter most of the time. And then we started de Mol. And that is an amazing journey. I've been wearing de Mol for the last the new de Mol for the last 9 years. So everything that you see from me is not something that's just arrived.
Yes.
It's something that's been trialed and tested and
over
been played
years.
With yeah. Over years of practicing.
Yeah.
Now let's get into the more generic stuff now.
Mm.
Like what you just mentioned, a lot of the young designers, they want to get out of Lysoff or, any fashion institute and art house and want to be de Mol, Hangwani, the David Clarley of these of this world, straight up. What's your take on this?
You know what? I'm very passionate about this.
Yeah.
Guys, to tell you the honest truth,
yeah.
longevity is only going to come if you graft, if you put the years in,
yes.
in performing and producing beautiful work. Clothing cannot just be a fashion. It needs to be something you are willing to put 1,000% into.
Mm.
I've been in the industry for 23 years. It took me quite a while for people just to even notice me or recognize me.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is not about recognition.
Yes.
This, in the end of the day, is about selling garment pieces that is good quality,
mm-hmm.
that they can wear for the next 10, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
not just a rag lying around for one occasion. We keep on thinking about fashion as just a glamour
yeah.
thing. There is no glamour. Sorry.
It's hard work. I mean, I've been also in the industry for like 15 years now.
Wow.
And I share the same sentiment as Conrad that he's just mentioned. You know, it takes a lot of, you put in plenty of hours into it. And I mean, I remember I would get home like before I had put in systems in place at Rubicon. I'll get back home like in the wee hours of the morning, like 5 o'clock. I've got a family. I've got 2 children. Yes. And I mean, you could imagine. And it's all about longevity. It's all about, you know, obviously translating garments that can translate into sales at the end of the day. It's a business at the end of the day. It's not just about, you know, being glitz and glam out there. I mean, I've been very reserved with Rubicon for such a long time until I had to say, okay, now it's time for you to come out and come out of your comfort zone. I mean, people knew Rubicon. I mean, at one point, I mean, even now, people still think Rubicon is owned by, I'm sorry to say, by a white person. Because I've been behind the scenes. So I'm actually really pushing the business side of things now and trying to obviously making sure that I build this so-called empire to when one day I'm gone, it's still, you know,
it's still there.
Hmm.
You know, to tell you the honest truth, I didn't know what to expect. As soon as the Rubicon name came on, you know, the screens and then the model started walking, I literally wanted to know who was behind and I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And as soon as you walked out, I was like, wow. And I clapped and, you know, it was really an amazing experience.
I wish I had walked down with my grandmother on that, you know, just to honor her. Yeah.
So the 2 minute millennial generation that has filters and everything given to them quickly, you want food, you go to a drive-thru, you order here, you pick up there. Mm. It's not going to work in this industry.
No,
so now let's talk a bit about the business of fashion and fashionomics. So with your both of your experiences, how do you best, as a designer, make your productions and clothing, in a sense, like sellable and make profit out of it?
Okay, I don't know. Can I start there?
Yeah.
Whenever I design something, I always like, you know, question myself, you know, ask myself rather that will I be able to wear this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it's a yes, it will go on because I would really believe in it. Then I know I'll be able to put more effort into the sales strategy and making sure that this particular collection has to sell.
Yes.
Yeah. It's at the end of the day, it's how you add the, you know, the added value in terms of the business value onto what you've created. Because it doesn't, I mean, how many functions do we have in terms of, you know, the likes of your, red carpets and all
event,
that. Yeah.
Yes.
So I know that Conrad has also got like a ready-to-wear collect line. I also have a ready-to-wear line and also added on with obviously the high end for those one-on-one, but which is quite, you know, I wouldn't advise any designer to start that way. You have to really push it, you know, and put more effort into creating, being a couturier. It's hard work. It's really hard work. And yeah.
You know what? I hit my head with that.
Yeah.
So I came out as a student, started a business immediately and did the couture side of it. Thought, you know, was cream cheese at that point.
Would love
that. Learned my lesson very fast.
Yeah.
But then after a while, when the recession started to hit, you know, like, when things started to go badly, I started to realize that fashion is changing completely.
Yes.
And I went to get some factory experience as a factory manager.
Okay.
And I did commercial crafting and I worked in commercial factories. And that was the most brilliant thing I've ever done in my entire life. Because there I was starting to learn about operations. Mm-hmm. What is operations on a garment?
Mm-hmm.
So to keep a garment affordable, what an operation actually means is that that's a stitch line.
Okay.
So operation, this is going to cost a certain amount of money.
Okay.
So for that stitch line, you're going to pay a certain amount of money. So when you start to count all the operations on a garment, it's going to cost a certain amount of money.
Okay.
And that's how commercial financially, you should apply. You should apply everything financially. You should ask, what is your market? Where is your market? And where are you going? And that's why I have become extraordinarily passionate about unisex clothing.
Okay.
It makes so much sense to me. Mm-hmm. It is, if you're a couple, you can wear the same thing. You don't have to go and double spend. And, you know, we already, you know, there's such a blur between the two sexes already.
Yes.
I mean, really, who cares? You know?
Yeah.
It's just becoming absolutely amazing looking at the world doing it. Mm-hmm. And, that's where I'm very passionate about. Mm-hmm. I think that's where we're going to maybe end up. I don't think it's everyone's taste.
Yeah. Yes.
But, financially, that makes more sense to me.
In the current economic, political and otherwise climate in South Africa, what are some of the things that somebody that in wants to pitch into the fashion space and help local designers be more profitable, more prominent? You know, you look at Gucci, anywhere in the world that you go, they're very profitable business, but we want to grow such of South African designers. So what would you want people from outside how should they contribute into making that possible?
I think the local market itself, it all starts from home.
Okay.
You know, the local market must start believing in, you know, what we are producing locally.
Okay.
And hence, obviously, it adds on to the GDP, you know, and we're able to create jobs.
Yes.
So it just makes business sense for everyone, for the economy to grow. Because when you're taking money out there, like spending on international brands,
yes.
It's not coming back here. Obviously, mm-hmm. there will be charged custom duties and all that, but it doesn't really add much value mm-hmm. into growing the economy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Conrad, from your side, what kind of education can we give, you know, the local consumer and customer of brands that local is better, actually, and we need to make local fashion more profitable than spending outside?
You know what? It is supporting us. I'm going to be very honest. I've been working in the industry, like I've said, for very long.
Yes.
And I have seen the journey. I have seen how long it's been taken us just to get here. Mm. Thank God for Lucilla.
Okay.
She has started this and she has put us on the map. Otherwise, I'm wondering if we would have been here where, you know, sitting here chatting to you. Hmm. We need more support from people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I'm going to put myself on the spot and I'm going to say our quality has become so much better.
It has. Hmm.
Our standards has become so much higher. It's so much easier for us to want to have a Gucci because everyone else have a Gucci.
Yes.
What about supporting South Africans so that they can become a Gucci?
Yes.
So that they can become someone. So that they can take this country where we need it to be taken. Mm-hmm. We as South Africans should start to support one another. Mm-hmm. And it would be great. Please, big please.
Yes. Please.
So now there's a Conrad that's listening right now and a Hangwani that are younger versions. Mm-hmm. From your experiences, quick, brief message that you'd want to send to them from either side.
Believe in yourself. I think that is the most unimportant thing if you start this career. Remember that this is going to be a long journey.
Okay.
Love what you do.
Hmm. I think I'll share the same sentiment again. It's staying true to who you are.
Okay.
And coupled with discipline. You know, without discipline, you cannot do it at all.
What are your social media handles?
At Rubicon Clothing. Mm-hmm. At Rubicon Clothing. At on, Rubicon Clothing.
On all social media
on
platforms.
On all social media platforms.
Demol.
On all social media platforms.
Love it.
Well, our social media platforms are YLP Cliff Central on Twitter and Instagram and Youth Leadership Platform on Facebook. Follow the conversation. We're going to be speaking to them more and asking them more questions and putting all that content out for you guys to read and to learn and so that we can all collectively grow the fashion space if you're interested in this particular industry. Yeah. The one constant message from everyone that's been in the studio today is find something, one thing that you really love. Stick to it all throughout your life. So do exactly that. From us at the Youth Leadership Platform, catch us next week at 2 p.m. only on Cliff Central. For now, from myself, Bongani, Tau, Conrad, and the lovely Hangwani, it is good day and God bless. CliffCentral.com.